Book 2, Chapter 15, How the Hebrews, Under the Conduct of Moses, Left Egypt. So the Hebrews went out of Egypt, while the Egyptians wept, and repented that they had treated them so hardly. Now they took their journey by Letopolis, a place at that time deserted, but where Babylon was built afterwards, when Cambyses laid Egypt waste. But as they went away hastily, on the third day they came to a place called Belzaphon, on the Red Sea. And when they had no food out of the land, because it was a desert, they eat of loaves kneaded of flour, only warmed by a gentle heat. And this food they made use of for 30 days. For what they brought with them out of Egypt would not suffice them any longer time. And this only while they dispensed it to each person, to use so much only as would serve for necessity, but not for satiety. Whence it is that, in memory of the want we were then in, we keep a feast for 8 days, which is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now the entire multitude of those that went out, including the women and children, was not easy to be numbered, but those that were of an age fit for war were 600,000. They left Egypt in the month Xanthicus, on the 15th day of the lunar month, 430 years after our forefather Abraham came into Canaan, but 215 years only after Jacob removed into Egypt. It was the 80th year of the age of Moses, and of that of Aaron 3 more. They also carried out the bones of Joseph with them, as he had charged his sons to do. But the Egyptians soon repented that the Hebrews were gone, and the king also was mightily concerned that this had been procured by the magic arts of Moses, so they resolved to go after them. Accordingly, they took their weapons and other warlike furniture, and pursued after them, in order to bring them back, if once they overtook them, because they would now have no pretense to pray to God against them, since they had already been permitted to go out. And they thought they should easily overcome them, as they had no armor, and would be weary with their journey. So they made haste in their pursuit, and asked of every one they met which way they were gone. And indeed that land was difficult to be traveled over, not only by armies, but by single persons. Now Moses led the Hebrews this way, that in case the Egyptians should repent and be desirous to pursue after them, they might undergo the punishment of their wickedness and of the breach of those promises they had made to them. As also he led them this way on account of the Philistines, who had quarreled with them and hated them of old, that by all means they might not know of their departure, for their country is near to that of Egypt. And thence it was that Moses led them not along the road that tended to the land of the Philistines, but he was desirous that they should go through the desert, that so after a long journey and after many afflictions they might enter upon the land of Canaan. Another reason of this was that God commanded him to bring the people to Mount Sinai, that there they might offer him sacrifices. Now when the Egyptians had overtaken the Hebrews, they prepared to fight them, and by their multitude they drove them into a narrow place, for the number that pursued after them was 600 chariots, with 50,000 horsemen, and 200,000 footmen, all armed. They also seized upon the passages by which they imagined the Hebrews might fly, shutting them up between inaccessible precipices and the sea. For there was, on each side, a ridge of mountains that terminated at the sea, which were impassable by reason of their roughness, and obstructed their flight. Wherefore they were pressed upon the Hebrews with their army, where the ridges of the mountains were closed with the sea, which army they placed at the chops of the mountains, so that they might deprive them of any passage into the plain. When the Hebrews, therefore, were neither able to bear up, being thus, as it were, besieged, because they wanted provisions, nor saw any possible way of escaping, and if they should have thought of fighting, they had no weapons. They expected a universal destruction, unless they delivered themselves up to the Egyptians. So they laid the blame on Moses, and forgot all the signs that had been wrought by God for the recovery of their freedom, and this so far that their incredulity prompted them to throw stones at the prophet, while he encouraged them and promised them their deliverance. And they resolved that they would deliver themselves up to the Egyptians. So there was sorrow and lamentation among the women and children, who had nothing but destruction before their eyes, while they were encompassed with mountains, the sea, and their enemies, and discerned no way of flying from them. But Moses, though the multitude looked fiercely at him, did not, however, give over the care of them, but despised all dangers out of his trust in God, who, as he had afforded them the several steps already taken for the recovery of their liberty, which he had foretold them, would not now suffer them to be subdued by their enemies, to be either made slaves or be slain by them. And, standing in the midst of them, he said, "It is not just of us to distrust even men, when they have hitherto well managed our affairs, as if they would not be the same hereafter. But it is no better than madness at this time to despair of the providence of God, by whose power all those things have been performed he promised, when you expected no such things. I mean all that I have been concerned in for deliverance and escape from slavery. Nay, when we were in the utmost distress, as you see, we ought rather to hope that God will succor us, by whose operation it is that we are now this narrow place, that he may out of such difficulties as are otherwise insurmountable, and out of which neither you nor your enemies expect you can be delivered, and may at once demonstrate his own power and his providence over us. Nor does God use to give his help in small difficulties to those whom he favors, but in such cases where no one can see how any hope in man can better their condition. Depend, therefore, upon such a protector as is able to make small things great, and to show that this mighty force against you is nothing but weakness, and be not affrighted at the Egyptian army, nor do you despair of being preserved, because the sea before and the mountains behind afford you no opportunity for flying, for even these mountains, if God so please, may be made plain ground for you, and the sea become dry land."